W-E-T-E-N-P-C.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Nope. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Welcome to the CB Wallet Podcast. I'm Phil Lucas.
And I'm Phil Jared. Why are we here, Phil? Tell me immediately.
Well, we are going to talk about the world's greatest disasters. What went wrong, how it went wrong, whether it was our fault or God's fault. Sometimes, though, Phil, we can talk about disasters that weren't the world's greatest, ones you may never have heard of.
But remember, Phil, It's not our intention to make light of the sometimes quite substantial mortality rate to some of these disasters, is it?
No. Nope.
Just interested in finding out what went wrong. And be honest with yourself, Phil. If it came on the news, I reckon you'd be interested, you rubbernecking piece of shit.
Girl, you know it's true.
What are we hanging on about this week?
Milli Vanilli.
On the front page, one day after it was revealed that the pop duo Milli Vanilli didn't sing on their hit album, few in the music industry are surprised, but many did not realize the extent of the deception. Sandy Kenyon has reaction to the announcement, but reports that record companies are oddly silent on the whole issue.
Girl, you know it's true.
The truth is, Milli Vanilli were living a lie by pretending to sing when they did not. The two performers involved, Rob Pilatus and Fab Morvan, released a statement claiming they were actually prevented from singing by their own producer, the same man who first revealed that their voices were silent. But at least one radio personality doesn't understand what all the fuss is about.
When you go to see a Milli Vanilli, or you go to see a great operatic, or you go to see Caruso perform, or you go to see something that'll last forever, now you're going to be entertained. Milli Vanilli is a facade.
The pair may be the hottest topic in the music industry right now, but no representative of a major record company would discuss them with CNN on camera. Here's one reason why. Sources tell us Milli Vanilli are not the only imposters in town. Sandy Kenyon, CNN Entertainment News, Hollywood.
Girl, you know it's true.
Only song of theirs I know.
Ooh, 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 I love you. The 1980s, Phil.
Late 80s, very, very early 90s.
Do you remember Millicent Vanilli?
I do remember them. I remember two chaps, broadly looking similar with the old dreads.
Yeah.
One slightly chubbier and with very piercing eyes than the other one.
Yeah, one of them very piercing
eyes.
Very
piercing
eyes. Also, even for the 80s, American football player type shoulders.
Oh, yeah, hardcore.
Insane shoulders. Mm. Do you remember them like being a band, though? Because I think I was too young.
Vaguely, yeah. Vaguely top of the pops. But, you know, like many of these bands, you hear them, they pass you by, you hear the song on the radio, but you're like, yeah, whatever. What about you?
No, too young.
How old were you then in, say, 1989?
I would have been 10. Years old.
10, yeah.
So, I mean, old enough to understand the concept of a Milli Vanilli, but not really to know the ins and outs of a Milli Vanilli.
Strange, though, because I was 5 when I fancied the blonde one from ABBA.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't know what fancying was, but I knew
that there was something about her.
Something about her, yeah.
No, I'm sure my sister knew Milli Vanilli, but I really, the first music I was aware of listening to really was MC Hammer.
Oh, okay.
And it's a similar style of rapping, isn't it, Millicent Vanilli? It's rapping to the beat.
Yeah.
We're Milli Vanilli. We're rapping now. We're rapping to the beat. That's that sort of rapping, right?
The best type.
So, Phil, let's get into this.
Yes.
Milli Vanilli. Mm. One of the most tragic of the stately Vanilli family. That old German family, the Vanillis. What and who were they?
They were a pop duo from the 80s and early 90s who were later exposed as not singing their own hits.
When did it happen?
When did it happen, Phil? The exposure of this pop travesty was fully made public on the 14th of November 1990.
And how many people died?
One.
One, yes. Because I thought when we were going to do the Vanilli Brothers that it was going to be like a fun,
All a laugh.
Mm. And then actually it's got quite a tragic ending, hasn't it?
Mm.
So, you know, can't take the piss too much.
No.
But let's get some background on these pop superstar duo.
Yes.
A girl, you know it's true. Who, who were Milli Vanilli.
To do that, Phil, I first need to introduce you to a man called Frank Farian. Now, Frank is the rock upon which this whole story is based.
By rock, do you mean bastard?
Well, it's possible. You may consider it to be when you've heard the whole tale.
Okay.
You may consider, or you may consider him genius.
It's a fine line between genius and bastard, isn't it?
He is a German record producer and songwriter, best known as the founder of 70s disco pop group Boney M.
Boney M?
Boney M, great.
Mary's group. Boy Child.
Yes.
Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes.
Rasputin, Russia's greatest love machine.
Before I get into the whole Frank Farian Milli Vanilli malarkey, I wanted to say something very positive about Boney M and the songs that you've just listed there.
Yeah.
Because as far as I'm concerned, they were the only band that consistently gave you a history lesson with their songs.
Yeah.
You know me, I like my history. I greatly admire it. You danced, but you also learnt.
I'll tell you another band who's great for that. Mm. Iron Maiden.
Oh, okay.
Iron Maiden, like you'll be headbanging, you'll be air guitaring, and you'll also be learning an awful lot about the Battle of Britain. And yeah, Boney M did that, right? Because Rasputin, obviously historically correct.
Yeah,
because it was a shame how he carried on.
It was a damn shame. And it laid out the basic biography of the hypnotic Russian weirdo with the allegedly enormous and preserved penis.
Where's it preserved?
Somewhere in Russia.
Wow.
It's big. I've seen it. You can Google it. Obviously, people are like, is it really his?
Yeah.
We don't know. But
how big are we talking?
It's a big old... well, I'm a bit worried now because I say it's big and then everyone will Google it and go...
No. That's right.
Who knows?
Yeah, it's huge. 3 inches, 4 inches long. Massive penis.
Mar Baker.
Yes.
All your essential backstory of that female criminal gang leader is contained in that story. Even though in real life she was called Mar Barker.
I had no idea she was a real person.
Real person in America. Changed it to Mar Baker because I just thought it sounded better. But Mar Barker.
Mar Barker, she was a bad un.
Mar Baker, she had a son's gun. Something like that. I don't know. Brown Girl in the Ring. Bringing a wider audience through traditional children's songs and games from the West Indies.
Really?
It's a traditional song.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I've got a newfound respect for Boney M.
Exactly. Rivers of Babylon, Phil.
Yeah.
The Bible for beginners.
Yeah.
Although, to be fair, that is a cover version.
Mm? Of what, the Bible or something?
Well, someone else did the Rivers of Babylon.
Jesus.
They covered it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But nevertheless, still history.
Oh, okay.
Now, I grant you, Phil, I've given you that info. I grant you Daddy Cool.
Yeah.
Didn't do much to progress historical education, and neither did One Way Ticket. With its lyrics, a choo-choo train, a trucking down the track, gotta travel on it, never coming back. Ooh, ooh, got a one-way ticket to the blues.
Tells you how to use a train.
We can't have it all, though, can you, to be fair? In the great scheme of things, Phil, as far as I'm concerned, Boney M did more than any other disco band of the 1970s to forward an appreciation of history amongst the dancing youth.
But anyway, that's Boney M, right? And they absolutely wrote and performed their own songs, right?
Should we go back to Frank Farian?
Yes, so tell us about Frank.
Right, he started as a cook.
They mainly do, don't they, these big producers.
Yeah.
They start off in cooking.
Yeah, but he wasn't good with the sauerkraut and bratwurst, so he moved into the music industry.
Mm.
Did a few solo things, didn't make much impact, and this, Phil, is where his genius, or his infamy, depending on how you look at it, came to the fore. Farian realised that he wasn't going to get very far as Frank Farian, so he decided to create bands with a visual image distinct from the recorded musical performances. In other words, the people that you saw on the stage performing the songs were not necessarily the people who sung the songs or played the instruments in the studio.
So he got ugly, talented people to write and sing.
Frank Farian.
And he got very good-looking, untalented people to prance around on stage. Is that what we're saying?
Yeah, kind of the Monkees, but turned up to 11.
He split it out.
Yeah.
That's right. He split it out.
Exactly. So you see, Farian wrote, produced and arranged the songs.
Yeah.
And sometimes arranged the cover versions as well.
Yeah.
But because he looked like a carpet salesman, he thought it was better that cool-looking people fronted it all.
Doesn't seem that bad, to be honest.
To me, it seems quite a logical thing.
It's just like getting writers in.
It's all about image, isn't it?
No one's taking Boney M to their heart, are they? The thing about Boney M is they really speak to me. They really speak the truth. It's just disco, isn't it? It's just for dancing.
Yeah.
So who gives a tits, really? As long as everyone's paid.
That's the way I look at it, and I think that's the way people in the 70s looked at it. Harder, better people.
You think? They were quite upset by this, weren't they?
No, I don't think they were.
Oh, okay.
No, you see, now I don't know if you remember Boney M, Phil. Do you remember?
I do remember Boney M because I liked Boney M when I was a kid.
Do you remember the very athletic, big-haired chap doing lots of splits and dancing on stage?
I absolutely do.
Didn't sing a word. No. Of the Boney M songs. Not one word in the studio. All those recordings, when he's going, my big girl, Frank Farian.
Is it really?
It's his voice.
Oh, I don't mind.
No.
Because like I say, when I look at Boney M and when I listen to Boney M, it's not the authenticity that I'm getting the vibes off.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I couldn't give a toss, to be fair.
Anyway.
So Boney M are just as bad, is what you're saying.
As bad as what?
As bad as Mrs. Vanilli.
Yeah. Started by the same person.
Yeah.
In the same kind of mould.
Yeah.
The difference being the 70s and 80s, but we'll come on to that. Oh, incidentally, Phil, that big-haired athletic chap I was telling you about was called Bobby Farrell.
Oh, yeah.
He was sacked by Boney M in 1981 for being unreliable.
Really?
He's dead now.
Oh.
Loved him as a kid.
How can you be unreliable if all you've got to do is be there?
He must have been very unreliable.
I mean, it's pretty bad, isn't it? If you don't even have to say anything, but you can't even be bothered just to stand and do the splits.
He's a very athletic man, though.
Yeah,
taking it out
so.
Of him. Anyway, Phil, Farrian had loads of success with Boney M. You remember them.
Yeah, they were a great band.
He had varying degrees of success with other bands too. But I think the best way to sum up Frank Farrian is in the words of Eurotrash presenter and general French legend. Do you remember Antoine Decamps?
Definitely.
He said, Farrian is a man famous for taking minor celebrities with little or no talent and turning them into major celebrities with little or no talent.
He was great.
He
what
was
did he
brilliant.
Used to do where it was just him standing?
Rapido.
Rapido. I used to really like that. When I was a kid, I used to watch Rapido. I had no idea what was
Didn't
going on.
Didn't have a clue, no.
No, just a French man talking.
I said it last weekend, because an apple a day keeps the doctor away, I'll say it again now. I still need to feel that each week you, my British friends, are in front of your TVs, listening to me, your ears pinned back, and your mouths open in awe, wondering what on earth I am saying, and watching me with eyes filled with desire. So thank you for keeping to our weekly rendezvous, where today we'll meet Jefferson Airplane, Wes Craven, Johnny Clegg, Little Bob and Shakespeare's sister.
I think, after all I've said, that it's important to add something here, unless we get carried away at the outset with the notion that since the early 70s, old Frank Farrian was sitting in his executive chair plotting the great deception of pop music with plastic frontmen like it was some sort of evil Svengali-like master plan.
Mm.
It was never really hidden with Boney M.
It wasn't a problem. It was just the way it worked.
Yeah, it was just the way it was. It was quite well known, you know, that flexible dancer Bobby Farrell never sang on the group's records.
You can tell he's not singing.
Yeah, no chance. And at the height of their fame, it was announced that one of the singers didn't sing on any of the studio recordings either. As Farrian stated, her voice wasn't that suited for that kind of music. And in the 70s, nobody really cared.
It's just about dancing.
Yeah.
It's just about music and dancing and having, like, front people.
Yeah, it didn't harm Boney M's reputation. It didn't harm Frank Farrian's reputation.
I mean, I could see if somebody said, you know, Jimi Hendrix, he's not actually him playing that guitar. Well, that would be a completely different thing because
yes.
the whole... It's built on the idea of being a virtuoso. Boney M were never built on the idea of it them being incredible singers.
It's plastic.
Yeah.
It's throwaway pop music.
Yeah, exactly.
That's lasted the decades.
To be fair, these days, I'm more surprised the other way around. You find out that Taylor Swift writes and performs all her own songs.
Yeah.
You're like, fucking hell, fair play.
Yeah.
Because I just assumed that she didn't.
You do, don't you?
Yeah. So it didn't harm their reputation.
It didn't harm their reputation, no. Possibly, though, in my incredibly humble opinion that's not worth a thing, where we move, I think, from just fitting pieces of a kind of musical, visual and branding puzzle together, particularly in those hazy, crazy times of discos, to actively going next level is where we need to talk about Milli Vanilli.
So Boney M is fine.
Yeah.
Because it's
all
agreed. We're all agreed that Boney M, that is the level of subterfuge that we will accept, right? No one, don't feel like no one's having the wall pulled over your eyes, lav, right? But with Milli Vanilli, it does feel like there's something underhand going on,
exactly.
Right? And that is what leads to disaster.
You tell me about it, Phil.
So should we talk about Mr. and Mrs. Vanilli?
Yeah.
The Vanillis were Rob Pilatus?
Mm.
Is that really his name?
Sounds like a yoga move.
It is a yoga move, isn't it? Pilates.
Pilates is different to yoga, isn't it? But it's in the same vein of...
It's sitting and stretching, isn't it?
It's women in tight things.
Women in tight jodhpurs, all sweaty in rooms.
Doing it whilst they're on maternity leave.
Yes. So, Robert Pilates and Fabrice Morvan.
Mm.
Are these their real names?
Yes.
Because they're incredible names.
They're great names, aren't they?
So it's so we call them Rob and Fab?
Yeah.
Okay, Rob and Fab. And as always, Phil, for the most basic and succinct background information, why should we turn to anybody but Wikipedia when Wikipedia has done so well? What do you reckon?
Cue the Wikipedia music.
Rob Pilatus met Fabrice Morvan in Munich. The two bonded over similar experiences they had growing up in European cities, Paris and Munich. The pair attempted to find work as backing singers, then formed their own act after adopting the name Milli Vanilli.
Nice.
The duo said that Milli Vanilli meant positive energy.
Oh, okay.
Do you think that's right? I mean, it means it in what way?
In Turkish.
In Turkish?
Didn't know.
Okay, so they just made that up. The reality, though, was that that the band was named after a defunct disco in Berlin.
By Frank Farian.
That's pretty cool, though, right? That's cooler than saying it's about positive energy.
Well, there is an alternative theory that it wasn't named after a defunct disco in Berlin, but it was simply because the two Lily twins, brothers, boys, like Skritti Politti. So they named their band after something that sounded like Skritti Politti.
That sounds more likely, doesn't
it? So is that or Frank Farian saying it's a defunct disco?
Secret Boney M frontman Frank Farian got to hear the duo and invited them to his Frankfurt studio to listen to a demo. Imagine what a music studio in Frankfurt's like in the 80s. That'd be cool as fuck, wouldn't
Huge,
it?
I bet.
Dirty. What happened next is the most crucial and contested part of the story, Phil, as the question is whether Rob and Fab, whether they knew what they were getting into. When they went into this dirty 80s Frankfurt music studio, did they know what they were walking into?
Young boys.
Or they just innocent bystanders into the whole Milli Vanilli affair? There's lots and lots of stories and interviews about this, but you're never going to get a definitive answer. Right, because I imagine Milli Vanilli are going to say, we didn't know anything about it. And Frank is going to say, I don't know what those fucking lads are talking about. I was in it from the start, mate.
In a nutshell.
They was fucking dirty with it, mate. All right? They come in at Frankfurt Studio and they said, all right, mate, we can't fucking sing. We can't write a fucking song, mate. But I tell you what, he's got a good haircut. I can do the splits. Let's be fucking millionaires. So, in a nutshell, here's a brief overview of what we reckon went down in Frankfurt, Phil.
Okay. In his version of events, Fab said, we walked into a trap not knowing it was a trap. You see, he and Rob signed the contract without realising that they were being hired purely to lip sync.
They were young, right? They were kids.
Very young, only 18, 19, I think. Yeah, I mean, they wanted to sing, obvs.
Yeah.
And the first time Farian played them Girl You Know It's True, the song that would become their international breakthrough, he presented the track as an instrumental. Little did they know, though, that Frank, Dirty Frank from Frankfurt, had already recorded vocals with professional singers.
Well, that seemingly sounds like fraud, right? That's the start. That seems like the first steps of a bit of a fraudulent...
Seems a bit dodge to me.
Yeah.
For his part, Frankfurt Frank says,
I have never heard such bad singers. They wanted to sing. They wanted to write songs. It never happened. They went instead to discos till 4 a.m. and slept all day. All they ever really did was party. Someone who lives like that can't make good music.
Fair play.
Is it true, though? I mean, that to me seems like the rock and roll lifestyle that you want from your pop stars, doesn't it?
You've got to lay down a track first, though, before you party.
That's a good point, isn't it? You've got to put something into it. Otherwise, who are you? Liam Gallagher. Do you know what I mean? You've either got to have lots of talent and no work ethic, but if you've got no talent, man, you've got to have a work ethic,
exactly.
Right? It is pretty unclear what Rob and Fab knew. What they knew, when they knew it, but for whatever reasons, they did agree to go along with the scheme. They signed the contract.
Right. Becoming the face and shoulders of the band.
Yes, that's right. It's from the nose down, isn't it? They signed the contract, Phil, with their own blood. They signed their contract. Whatever the hell that contract said, Milli Vanilli didn't know, right? But they signed it on January the 1st, 1988.
My understanding was they had no legal representation with them.
Yeah.
And the contract was in German. And I think Fab was French.
And they're both French.
I don't think they spoke.
I don't think they speak the language.
Not to be able to dissect a legal document.
Like the allure of being a pop star would be so strong. You know, if someone said to you, we're going to make you a pop star, I mean, I'd sign anything.
Oh, yeah.
By May that year, Millicent Vanilli were touring Europe, Phil.
Mm.
Imagine that. Wow. They're going to all the big clubs.
Gothenburg.
Gothenburg they're going to. They're going to...
Dusseldorf.
Dusseldorf. Hamburg.
Cherbourg.
Cherbourg. Milli Vanilli are crushing it from the neck down. They were lip-syncing to pre-recorded tracks and thrilling crowds with their distinct style, Phil.
All right.
Which was, and I quote, spandex shorts, thigh-high boots, hair extensions.
Yeah.
The holy triumvirate of 80s pop. Who needs to be able to sing when you've got that triple threat going on?
That is a triple threat.
They danced in synchronicity, lip syncing. Pretty good.
Very tight kind of shorts, if I remember rightly.
Very tight shorts.
Very tight. But so they were sort of like an inverted triangle.
Inverted triangle. Imagine Wizbit upside down rapping to the beat. I'm Wizbit, here I am, I'm rapping to the beat. Wizbit, probably the nichest reference I've ever made on this.
I know the name, know nothing about it.
Wizbit was Paul Daniels in a triangular suit.
Oh, God, I do remember that now. Yes, yes.
It feels like a fever dream, but it really did happen.
It did happen, yes. Okay. Yes.
So that's where we are by May of 1988.
Right.
Milli Vanilli are crushing being pop stars.
Just as I'm finishing my A-levels.
Yep.
Milli Vanilli are crushing the lip syncing.
They are living the dream.
Right.
From the nose down. Right. At this point, according to a quote by Rob Pilatus, Phil?
We would ask Frank, when are we going to be allowed to give some artistic input? And he would say, yeah, yeah, but not right now. We need you to go out and do promotion. Of course you'll get to do it. Just work with us.
Lies. An absolute web of lies, Frank is coming out with.
Isn't he?
I feel sorry for Millicent Vanilli.
Yeah.
Because they are being tagged along, I think, by a man who is high. Really, he's drunk on power because of the success of Boney M.
Groomed and used.
Yes, they're being groomed and used, aren't they?
Just not sexually.
Not sexually, but they're being put into some pretty severe shoulder pads and pushed around the pubs and clubs of the Upper Silesia.
Well, they're very easy to push.
But now, Phil... Girl, You Know It's True.
Ah.
That's what's dropping now.
Yes.
Right? It took off in Germany in the summer of 1988. Okay? Farian wrote and produced most of the material on the Milli Vanilli album, All or Nothing.
Of course he did.
Funny that album was called All or Nothing.
He did all of it. They did nothing.
Yeah, exactly, that's right. The album was released in Europe in November 1988. Pilatus goes on further to say, Phil...
After Frank released the album, he told us that it was too late to stop now because the single was such a big success. He said, now you have to go through with it. I'll cover you guys. Nobody will find out. He said, here, I give you $20,000 advance money.
I'm just changing the accent how I feel.
No, I like him being... I like the Mexican mafia boss. By December of 1988, Phil, the spandex short-wearing, thigh-high boot-donning, hair-extension-sporting duo came to the painful realisation that their actual voices would never appear on any Milli Vanilli tracks. It took them a year, but they rumbled it. They rumbled it. They'd signed a contract saying it, albeit in a language they couldn't understand, and they'd been living it in the pubs and clubs around Europe for a whole year. They finally rumbled the fact that Frankfurt Frank is never going to let them use their own rancid voices.
But they're probably sleeping with a lot of women and taking a lot of drugs and getting a lot of adulation.
Yes.
So they're probably just like, all right then.
Yeah, you know, not forklift truck drivers, are they? Do you know what I mean? They're having a nice time, I should imagine, Millicent Vanilli. At least, Phil, that's their version of events.
Okay.
Because in the murky world of German Europop, right, we don't know what's going on, right?
Nobody did.
Do you know what it's like? It's like The Irishman. It's like a Scorsese film with shoulder pads. We don't know what's going on, right? Milli Vanilli got one story. Old Dirty Frank's got another story. Boney M are coming in, going out. We don't know what the fuck's going on. Rasputin's having sex with the Queen, right?
With his big knob.
With his big knob, then being stabbed and shot and poisoned and stabbed and drowned. What the fuck's going on in 80s pop? No one really knows. At least we don't know. As ever, it all depends who you listen to, Phil.
Yeah, of course.
It depends what sources you go from, right? If you go on YouTube...
I do sometimes.
Which is a very reliable source, YouTube. There's a really interesting 90-minute interview on YouTube with Fabrice Morvan.
Ah, yes, giving his version of events.
Gives it. It's very long, isn't it? A huge long
thing. Yes, yes.
Okay, well, now, so you can have a listen to that if you really want to get into the nitty-gritty of what happened with them from his point of view.
I watched it. I thought it was quite a decent sort of chap.
He seems all right, doesn't he?
I warmed to him.
Yeah. And he does feel like the victim in this, I think. I don't think that there's anything... I don't feel like attending any blame, really, to Millicent Vanilli for this. They was caught up in a whirlwind of German pop.
Yeah.
And haven't we all been there at some point, especially during the 80s? Very easy to do.
I would go as far to say, Phil, as having watched that 90-minute interview with him, I'd want to go out for a drink with him.
He seems like a lovely bloke.
Yeah, and I don't want to go out for a drink with anyone.
No, you really don't. But I tell you what, if there's one thing I've always said about you, is he doesn't want to go for a drink with anybody unless it's one half of the still surviving Milli Vanilli. And I'm pleased that I've been vindicated in that respect. So what happened then? What's the outcome?
Right, so this is where it all took off. Probably much bigger than Frank himself even expected. For all of his showbiz acumen, Frank seemed a little bit surprised by it all. "It was a crazy idea," he told the Los Angeles Times. "I thought, okay, it's just for the discotheques and clubs." But his mix of pop, R&B and hip-hop, that's pushing it, was perfectly pitched for the Times, and Milli Vanilli quickly became the music industry's equivalent of a Frankenstein monster, or Phil, right, get this, a Frankenfarian monster.
Lovely.
Do you like that?
I do like that.
Yeah, came up with that all myself.
Lovely.
The album, All or Nothing, was repackaged as Girl You Know It's True, for audiences in the US. Yeah. So the album was named after the single.
The single, yeah.
And it was released in March 1989. It became a major success, producing 5 singles that entered the top 5 of the Billboard Hot 100.
Wow.
3 of which, Baby Don't Forget My Number,
yeah,
Blame It on the Rain,
yeah,
and Girl I'm Gonna Miss You, all went to number 1.
Do you know any of those songs?
I think I know Girl I'm Gonna Miss You.
Girl, I'm gonna miss.
Girl, I'm gonna miss you.
Oh no, I think it's Girl, I'm gonna miss you.
I don't.
Gonna miss you, girl. I'm gonna.
No, no.
Miss you, girl. Gonna rap into the beat. Ha ha ha. No.
No, but I like it.
Yeah.
In January 1990, Girl, You Know It's True was certified 6 times platinum.
Wow.
6 times. The success of the album earned the duo 3 American Music Awards. And a Grammy for Best New Artist.
Christ.
Around the world,
yeah,
they sold 14 million albums and 33 million singles.
Shit.
These boys, Phil.
Yeah.
They're in deep.
In deep.
Too deep.
I can see this being scary now. Like, it's all right when you make a little, you do a little subterfuge just to get things going. Mm. It explodes in your face, and what are you going to do? You can't row back, can't you? You just got to go with it.
Well, if it's true that Frank thought, well, yeah, this is probably going to become a bit of a hit in the discos in Berlin or whatever, doesn't really matter, does it? And suddenly he's got Grammys,
yeah,
got whole of America. And
it's not
like,
his fault they give him a fucking award. Don't give him an award. They can't even talk. Who did the acceptance speech? I can see it being a little bit like, oh, shit.
The pressure on them.
The pressure's bad now.
Yeah, it must be awful, because these are young boys.
Yeah.
They're not young boys. These are young men.
With very, very, very wide shoulders. yes, I can see it spiraling out of control. Yeah. And you're not really knowing. At what point do you say, you guys know they're not singing, right? Mm. Do you do it when you accept the Grammy?
Well, it's interesting you say that, Phil. Because there were rumours within the music industry quite early on that all was not what it seemed. Not least because, as you've mentioned, the duo's grasp of English wasn't very good.
Yeah.
What they sounded like on record wasn't what they sounded like in interviews. Now, of course, that wouldn't be enough on its own to raise alarm bells. But coupled with a live lip-syncing cock-up that was caught on MTV, where the backing track got stuck, it made people in the business begin to question things.
Oh, I've seen that. It's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
It's absolutely horrific when that happens. Because I don't know if it's Rob or Fab. One of them keeps going like it's beatboxing.
Rob, I believe.
He just keeps on singing.
Mm.
Like it was some sort of breakdown they did. Like, but it's obviously a record skipping.
I wanted to die. Stop. Girl, you know it's girl, you know it's girl. 80,000 people. Girl, you know it's girl, you know.
You know, I couldn't repeat it 15 times. Girl, you got obvious still. So I stopped, I panicked, I ran off stage. Julie Brown, who used to work for MTV, ran after me. I didn't want to go back to stage. I had enough. 80,000 people waiting. I said, I have enough. I quit.
So embarrassing, heartbreaking.
Oh,
really,
you feel
them.
For them, don't you? Yeah. You see, the thing is, a lot of actually has been made of that. The thing is, though, everyone knows that bands lip sync.
Yeah.
So a cock up on the tape or whatever it was didn't really mean that you weren't the voice on the original tape.
It doesn't naturally follow, does it? Do you
no.
know what I mean?
You
it's
know,
just like, oh, at this point, their backing track fucked up. You don't go, the whole thing's a sham.
Exactly.
Yeah.
As bad as it is, that has only become an important part of the Milli Vanilli story when we started to know all the facts.
Anyway, all that's well and good. We've got this massive, worldwide selling, Grammy-winning band, and it's all bollocks,
oh,
right?
Man.
It's all a sham, right? It's all been stitched together by Frankfurt Frank, right?
Dirty Frankfurt Frank.
Dirty German Frankfurt Frank.
In his greasy studio.
In his grotty studio.
The floor that you sticky on your feet as you walk across to the mixing desk.
He's got a big cigar and he's like, bring in Mini Vanilli. But you've got a Grammy. Now, you know what people say about a Grammy, Phil?
Mm.
Grammy messes with your head.
What success?
Success messes with people's heads, right? And whether you've sung your songs or not, you're going to get an ego.
Yeah.
Right? And imagine them, Milli Vanilli, not only have they got all those like fans screaming their name, all the interviews, they've got those huge shoulders, and that's going to make you feel like a big man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
They've got a chip on those huge
exactly, right?
A lot of weight on those huge
shoulders. An awful lot of weight on those huge shoulders, right? At least that's what Frankfurt Frank thought.
Okay.
Frankfurt Frank was firmly of the opinion that these lads are getting far too big for their shoulder pads, right? And he thought they were coming a bit too big for their boots and annoying him by asking if they could sing on their own songs.
How unbelievable.
In the March 1990 issue of Time magazine, Phil, Rob was quoted proclaiming himself to be the new Elvis.
Oof.
They've had one successful album and one successful song. They haven't fundamentally redefined music in the Western world.
No. In the great history of shoulder pads, they probably aren't more than a footnote.
I wouldn't have said that. They're not in the top 10 greatest shoulder pad wearers, are they?
I know Joan Collins.
No. Gary Glitter is even probably before them, and he's a paedophile. Anyway. His reasoning, Phil, and I think this is solid, this reasoning.
Okay.
He said they were more talented musically than Bob Dylan, Paul McCartney and Mick Jagger. What do you reckon? Now, Dylan's done some good stuff.
Dylan's stuff always is better when somebody else does it.
Oh, God, it's so much better. Bob Dylan needs to be separated from his harmonica. Because that is a man who cannot play the harmonica. To be fair, the other Vanilli, Fab Vanilli, which does sound more and more like an ice cream,
doesn't it? Yeah, I'd have that. I'd have a Fab Vanilli.
I'd have a Fab
Come
Vanilli.
Come the
summer. Oh, lovely.
Oh, you're getting a bit hot on the beach.
Bibbly bobbly. I've seen you on the beach. he always denied that Rob meant that.
Yeah.
Right? His words were taken out of context. And I can see it's such a great soundbite because they are so not that.
Mm.
You know, they can't have thought they were better than fucking Bob Dylan, could they?
Not even with those shoulders.
No, I mean, Jesus Christ.
I think to be fair to them, though, they did say they came into that interview drunk and still high from the night before, so he probably would have said anything.
There was another problem, though, Phil.
Okay.
And this one actually occurred 2 months before the Grammys.
Okay, so we rewind.
Unlike the international release of Milli Vanilli's album, the inserts for the US version explicitly, Phil, attributed the vocals to Fab and Rob.
Oh.
Now, this is a problem because, what's that, Phil?
That's a lie.
It's a lie, isn't it? It's an old-fashioned 80s lie. Right? And knew who that pissed off?
Was it a bloke called Charles Shaw?
Charles Shaw was freaking livid about that, right? Who's Charles Shaw?
He was the bloke who sang lead vocals on Girl, You Know It's True.
Absolutely. Now, Shaw had simmering beef.
Ah.
Right? He had simmering beef anyway because he'd been sacked by Frankfurt Frank shortly after release of the song. What a kick in the balls. Essentially, you're the voice, the main bit of this absolute smash hit.
Mm.
You do your rapping to the beat, make £1 million for Frankfurt Frank, then he kicks you out the door. No wonder he's got simmering beef.
But to be fair, he was never. No one was ever going to know that he was the singer, so...
He's kicked out the door. He's got nothing, Phil.
Apart from the $6,000 he was given to record the song.
$6,000?
It's not much, is it?
It's not much if it's a... It's a lot if it's not a hit.
What's $6,000? About £4,500?
Oh, fuck, it's nothing, isn't
You'd barely get yourself a decent people carrier that's 8 years old.
The reason Frankfurt Frank sacked him is because threatened to give the game away. He's like, you don't pay me more than $6,000. I'm going to blow this caper wide open. In December 1989, Charles Shaw, remember him?
Yes.
Disclosed to a journalist, Phil, that he was one of three singers on Milli Vanilli's debut album, and that the Milli Vanilli frontmen were imposters.
Imposters?
It was all a fraud. The shoulder pads were fake, the hair, the splits, everything was fake.
I think the hair was real.
The cat was not only out of the bag, it had shit all over the curtains. Frank Farian then paid Shaw $150,000 to retract his statements.
Frankfurt Frank, maybe realising that time was up, maybe getting a little bit hacked off with the duo, decided to do something about it. Don't forget, Phil, don't ever forget this. The band needed to do a second album because they'd signed a 3-album deal.
Yeah.
But those little Vanilli twins were pushing Frankfurt Frank hard to have greater creative input into their work, something that Frankfurt Frank didn't want at all.
Yeah.
They were also, because of their success, pushing Dirty Frank for a lot more money.
Yeah.
Now, according to Fab, Farian had also got wind that the duo were planning something else in the future that didn't involve him. Naughty.
Yeah.
So Frank decided to act. On the 14th of November 1990, Dirty Frank Farian from Frankfurt announced publicly that he had fired the duo and admitted that they had not sung a word of their records and had lip-synced through all of their live performances.
He hung them out to dry.
Hang them out to dry.
What a bastard.
It didn't go down well, Phil.
I bet not.
Immediately, the Grammy people said that they wanted to strip the band of their award if those allegations proved to be correct. A few days after what I would imagine were probably some fairly sleepless nights for the Vanilli twins, the duo gave a press conference where they sung a few lines from their songs just to prove they could sing, and they said they'd like to give their Grammy back.
I'm in love with you, girl, put your arm on mine. And you're the one I think about most every time, when you crack a smile and everything you do.
Give this Grammy back now.
Now, there's a bit of confusion here, Phil, because some people say that they were stripped of their Grammy, but the duo always claimed that they offered it back before they were seen to be stripped of it.
They resigned before they were fired, essentially.
That's what they were saying. Yeah. But, you know, half a dozen of one, 54 of the other.
Either way, it's not good, is it?
It's not good, is it? Yeah. They're screwed. Yeah. They're screwed. Anyway, in this press conference, Rob claimed that they ended the band, not Frank Farian.
We ended it. Rob and Fab ended Milli Vanilli, not Frank Farian. We told him, if we can't sing on our record, you have to go on the press and say that we don't sing. Because we couldn't break out of our contract. Just the producer can stop the contract. The artist, for us, it would be difficult to stop a contract and try to release other albums with other producers, with other record companies. So we had to pressurize him that he stepped back. But we finished this game.
The following day, they gave an interview to the Los Angeles Times where they said,
"We sold our souls to the devil. We lied to our families and our friends. We let down our fans. We realised exactly what we did to achieve our success. We made some very big mistakes and we apologise. We never meant for it to go this way. Our producer tricked us. We signed contracts as singers, but we was never allowed to contribute. It was a nightmare. We was living a lie. The psychological pressure was very hard and it was like we was trapped in some golden prison."
Well, whatever the situation, Phil, the duo were completely finished. And this being America, the lawsuits came in thick and fast. Obs they did. And there were loads of them going about the place. Too many to mention, in fact, if I was to be brutally frank with you. And let's face it, lawsuits, dead boring, isn't it?
Deafers.
But you know what happens in these sorts of things, Phil? You get the big record company stuff, but then you get all this like nonsense litigation from like, you know what it's like, from like the parents of kids who were traumatised by the revelations, really? Or super fans who feel emotionally let down, blah, 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 boring snowflake stuff. Anyway, it got all sorted out eventually. You know what it's like, don't you? You know, oh, hang on, there's a few quid here. I'll say my son's traumatised.
Yeah.
And Frank Farian didn't care, Phil. He was minted. He just went back to Boney M and stuff like that. In fact, he just carried on and he put an album out, this is my favourite thing, under the band name The Real Milli Vanilli, which contained the original Siggers.
He couldn't give a toss,
that's
could
a
he?
Kick in the nuts, isn't
properly
it?
Couldn't give a toss, this lad.
Yeah, didn't do very well, though. Now, the original Milli Vanilli boys didn't fare too well, though. You can imagine the huge shock and stress this whole roller coaster must have been to them both. I mean, yeah.
Horrible experience for them.
They're still young, you know. I don't know. I don't think I could cope with that now as a fully grown, mature man.
It feels like they did most of this in good faith.
They've been co-conspirators in it, but were they in too deep?
It feels to me like that, like if it was like a banged up abroad, they're a drugs mule.
Yeah.
They've been made to take drugs through customs without really knowing what's going on. Mm. So they are culpable, but you know, there is a shady boss behind them, I think. Yeah. I feel a bit sorry for them.
Yeah, I do as well. And I think it's fair to say that Fab coped far better with all of this than Rob.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, there's no doubting that they both had some pretty severe periods of depression and addiction from the fallout of all of this.
I mean, it must be awful because one of the things about fame is they get very famous, they get very rich, or sometimes they get very rich, really.
Mm.
They get very famous and they get a lifestyle. They get all of the addictions, they get all the stuff, and then the fucking fame disappears, but the addictions don't go, do they?
You still
want the fucking coke.
Well, yeah, and the thing is, with some people, a lot of artists, their fame wanes.
Yeah.
This, it was overnight.
Yeah.
It was like, you're great, no.
No, you're frauds.
You're frauds out.
Yeah.
So nobody wanted them.
And also, what talent they had, because we've been taking a piss saying they had no talent whatsoever, but they would have had some sort of talent. That it was like, it's like you've got no talent, you've got nothing.
Mm.
You're basically marionettes.
Mm.
When, you know, they could sing, they just didn't.
Yeah.
You know.
And they still put on a good show.
They put on a good
show. They could do the dancing, they could entertain people.
That's not a nothing skill.
No.
You can't just get someone off the street and go, it's all right, mate, we've written a song for you, and someone else is going to do the look. He's still going to look like a fat bastard prancing up and down the stage. Like, they did bring something to it, and I think it is really harsh that it did just cut off overnight.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, I totally agree. The good thing is that Fab was able to sort of dust himself down, clean himself up a bit.
Yeah.
And do all right for himself, really, you know.
What did he do?
He does a bit of DJing. He still sort of sings Milli Vanilli songs here and there in his own voice. He's doing all right for himself.
Yeah.
It was Rob that wasn't really able to cope, and he suffered really, really heavily. So he did actually try and release a new album just after all this kind of came out, which, of course, they did sing on under the name Robin Fab. How many copies do you think, bearing in mind 33 million singles, 14 million albums, how many do you think this album sold?
20 million.
2,000.
Oh, shit. Really? That's
not
bad,
good. Although they are saying that there were some distribution problems
that may have
contributed to that a bit. But they had fallen.
Yeah.
They have seriously
fallen. It's a massive
fallen.
Fall,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. In a weird twist, though, for reasons which are not entirely clear, Frankfurt Frank did team up again with Rob, the slightly bigger one with the piercing eyes, in 1997 in an attempt to produce a new Milli Vanilli album with him on the lead vocals. But Fab was not involved in this.
Why not?
At all. He didn't want to be. I think Fab was a bit more wise now. But, you see, this is the sad part. You see, Rob was going through different things to Fab. So just as they were kind of recording this Milli Vanilli comeback album, Back and In Attack was the name of it, which even actually had some of the original backing singers on it, but with Rob. The trouble was, Phil, Rob was encountering a lot of personal problems at this time. As I mentioned to you before, he suffered very much with depression and drug addiction. His drug use at this time was continuing, getting much, much worse. He was doing random crimes. He was ultimately sentenced to 3 months in prison and also put in a drug rehabilitation unit in California.
Shit.
So you can kind of think that if he's been offered some sort of financial lifeline or some way of getting his life back on track, you can sort of see why he probably went, yeah, all right, I'll go back.
Yeah, oh, I see.
But this guy was in a real was in no state to be doing this when he was doing it.
Yeah.
On the eve of the new album's promotional tour, which was the 2nd of April 1998, Rob was found dead of a suspected alcohol and prescription drug overdose in a hotel room in Frankfurt. The death was ruled as accidental.
Oh, really? I thought he killed himself.
Well, that's not been proven.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because he was so heavily addicted.
That's what happens, isn't it?
Difficult
to
know.
A lot of the time, it's not clear-cut, is it? Mm. That's awful.
It's horrible, isn't it? Really, really sad. But like I say, you know, Fab, he continues to do all sorts of things. Seems quite happy. Sings a few of their songs himself. At one point, he was even touring with the actual Milli Vanilli singer.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Under the moniker, I love this, under the moniker, Face Meets Voice. But essentially, what I'm trying to say is Fab, he keeps himself busy and he seems quite happy.
And there's a lot of goodwill towards him now, I think. And maybe there was goodwill towards him even then. I don't feel like people hate Milli Vanilli.
I think people have lives.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's more of just like an interesting story of an 80s pop oddity now, rather than something that you would get upset about. Mm. The idea that you would feel traumatised by the fact that Milli Vanilli lied to you is absolutely
I bet there's
madness.
One person in this country, though. Well, I'm still really, really livid and cut up about it.
There might be someone who's got like a room full of mini t-shirts
some
and posters.
Somewhere.
And he's like, what's in there? And he's like, oh, well, you don't go in there anymore. So, Phil.
Yes.
That was the, in the end, quite tragic and sad story of Mr. and Mrs. Vanilli Brothers.
Yeah.
What do you reckon, Phil? God's fault or our fault?
I think it was Frank's fault, and as he's human, it's our fault.
Our fault, definitely Frank's fault. Mm. A little bit Milli Vanilli's fault, but only through a little bit of youthful naivety and wanting to be famous and pop stars and that.
Yeah.
And who doesn't want to be a German pop star? I know I do. So thank you so much for listening to that. The, I think, maybe the 32nd or something.
Something like that.
We're in the 30s now.
Yeah.
Episode of the CB Wallop podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to have a go at us on Twitter, our Twitter handle is Phil Lucas.
At CB Wallop.
We're also on Instagram, but I have lost the login details.
So have I.
So probably don't comment on that. We've had some nice reviews since the last time. Thank you so much. Big thank you to everyone who's reviewed the show.
First of all, we would like to thank Analog Sean, who says...
Oh, not Analog Sean.
Analog
he
Sean.
He takes ages.
Dial up Sean. I hate everything on the internet apart from raccoons and this podcast. Kind of with him there.
Why raccoons, do you think?
Raccoons are brilliant. If raccoons didn't have such an unusual name, they would be the go-to comedy animal for the next 5 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Why, absolutely. What are they up to?
They're brilliant. Just Google raccoons. They just... dick around.
Because they've got hands.
Yeah, they break into people's houses, they nick food, they get so fat that they can't get out of drains and stuff like that, and they're just little buggers.
That sounds awesome.
They're excellent. Anyway, Analog Sean said, two blokes telling terrible stories with humour and feeling, I must listen.
Oh,
so that's
lovely.
Very nice of him.
Fanar!
Oh.
Says this review. Okay. Fanar!
Oh. Someone's been reading the B-note.
K. Neves.
Okay.
Or maybe the K silent. Neves. says funny and informative. History and funnies are my favourite, so it's right up my street. Literally, as I'm from Brighton. Thanks, Kneeves.
Thank you. That's very kind.
That's very nice of you to get in touch with us.
I've got one here from, as he ruffles his paper like a panicking newsreader, Bridie Dance.
Mm.
Okay, and she... guessing it's a she.
Why do you think it's a she?
Bride is a girl's name, isn't
you
it?
You absolute piece of shit. It could be anything.
Okay. They say,
yeah.
I normally listen exclusively to true crime podcasts. Since my boyfriend, ha, see,
oh, shit.
Suggested Crash Bang Wallop, I have listened every day. It's a brilliant concept and I've learnt loads. Thanks, Phils. Thanks, Bridie. That's very kind of you.
And thank you to everybody who reviewed us. That's lovely. Thank you so much for listening to the CB Wallop podcast this week. Phil Lucas, you got anything to add?
No.
Excellent news. We will see you in... let's say 3 weeks.
Give it a shot.
Let's say 3 weeks. We'll see what happens. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time. Goodbye!
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shaped the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisiscle.com/podcast.